First of all, I want to say something about objective or indirect raising of the level of consciousness. And I want to say something about it because some people appear to think that meditation is the only way of raising the level of consciousness. As if to say that consciousness must be raised directly by working on the mind itself, or not at all. And such people therefore identify meditation with the spiritual life, and the spiritual life exclusively with meditation. So that if you're not meditating, you can't possibly be leading a spiritual life. Sometimes they even identify spiritual life with a particular method or technique of meditation. And this is far too narrow. It makes us forget what spiritual life really is. That is to say that it consists in the raising of the level of consciousness, and it even makes us forget sometimes what meditation itself really is. It's true, of course, that the raising of the level of consciousness by direct methods is at least as important as raising it by indirect methods. One might even say that it's perhaps more important, but one shouldn't forget that other methods do exist. If one did forget this, it would be too one-sided. And if one acted upon this, one would tend to make the spiritual life itself one-sided, and even to exclude certain kinds of people. People of certain temperaments. People who weren't perhaps particularly interested in meditation, in the direct approach. So let us very briefly look at some of these indirect, non-meditative methods of raising the level of consciousness. We won't have time for any detail, but at least I'll enumerate a few of these indirect methods simply to remind ourselves of their existence. First of all, something very simple, very practical, very obvious, you may say, change of environment. Change of environment. And this happens, of course, quite consciously, as an indirect means of changing, hopefully raising a level of consciousness, when we go away on retreat. When we go away perhaps into the country to a retreat center and we spend a few days or even a few weeks simply in more favorable, more congenial surroundings, perhaps not even doing anything in particular. And this is often more helpful than people realize. And it suggests that the environment in which we normally have to live and work isn't particularly good for us, doesn't help in the raising of the level of awareness. I must say that many and many a time I've had the experience of conducting a retreat. I wouldn't like to say now how many retreats I've conducted, but it's quite a good number. And every time one sees the same thing happen, you get a group of people, it may be 5 or 6 people, it may be 20 or 30, it may be up to 100 people. You take them out of their normal surroundings, their normal environment, you put them down in the country somewhere, you provide them with their meals, you ask them to do a little bit of meditation, to take things easy, and what you see, at once they start blossoming, as it were, that level of consciousness rises. You can see it happening day by day under your very eyes. So change of environment can very often work wonders in this sort of way. Change your environment in a positive fashion and your level of consciousness very often just rises without any further effort, which suggests that normally, putting that word normally in single inverted commas, normally we live in circumstances, under conditions, which do not permit us to reach even a state of consciousness which is normal and natural for us. So a change of environment in this sort of way, especially, as I mentioned, when we go away on retreat, a change of environment is one of the best and easiest and most practical indirect ways of raising the level of consciousness. You don't even have to meditate. And so many people have found the truth of this in their own experience, their own life. And then again, something which is quite practical and simple and almost obvious. What we call in Buddhism right livelihood. Right livelihood. practically everybody has to work for a living. And what does this mean? It means that we do the same kind of work every day. Yes, of course, we're quite young and change our job every few weeks. Huh? But quite a lot of people, they do the same kind of work every day, 5 days a week, 50, or perhaps in New Zealand it's 48 or 49 weeks of the year. And you may do it for 5, 10, 15, 20, 35, 30 years until you come to the age of retirement. So what does this mean? Your mind is being affected all the time. If your work is, as it were, unhealthy, and unhealthy in the mental, moral, and spiritual sense, the effect on your mind will also be unhealthy. So therefore, in Buddhism, in the Buddhist teaching, we are advised very, very strongly to look at our means of livelihood and to practice to pursue right livelihood, which means earn our living in a way which does not lower our own state of consciousness, which does not prevent us from raising our state of consciousness, and which does no harm to other living beings. And in traditional Buddhism, there's a sort of list of occupations which normally, usually, aren't very helpful. One which is mentioned is that of a man who works in a slaughterhouse. And I believe if one mentions this sort of thing in New Zealand, one is treading on rather delicate economic ground. So perhaps I shouldn't say anything more than that, but it certainly is a rather prominent and concrete example. So one should therefore take up work, regular work, employment, which does not get in the way of one's raising of the level of one's own consciousness, or at least it doesn't obstruct. If you can make a change in your means of livelihood, assuming it to be at present not quite right, then just that change of work, change of place, change of environment, that change of the sort of people you work with, the sort of thing that you have to do every day, will have a positive and helpful effect on your own level of consciousness, and at least prevent it, or at least rather not prevent it, from rising. And then again, becoming a bit more specific and a bit more concrete, is what we may describe as the leading of a regular and disciplined life, something which apparently is becoming less and less popular. And this consists in, for instance, the observance, the practice of moral precepts and principles, having fixed regular hours for meals, for work, for recreation, for study, and observing great moderation in such things as eating and sleeping and talking, and sometimes even fasting, sometimes even observing for a few days or perhaps a week or two on end, fasts. And of course, in its fully developed form, this more regular, disciplined life is what we call the monastic life, for want of a better term. And I have seen myself in the East so many people leading a monastic life, a regular, disciplined life, in different traditions, Buddhist and Hindu, over a period of years. And one can see quite clearly that if one leads this sort of life, even without any meditation, if one is leading a very regular and disciplined life, then certainly a change in the state, even in the level of consciousness, does take place, even by this sort of indirect means. And then coming on now a little more rapidly to a few other more indirect methods, there are things like, for instance, Hatha Yoga. That is, yoga in the more physical, in the more somatic sense. And I'm especially thinking in terms of what are called yogic asanas. These don't affect only the body, they affect the mind too. They affect the mind through the body. And one knows that even people who meditate regularly sometimes do find asanas very helpful and very useful. Sometimes even the experienced meditator may be a bit too tired at the end of a day's work, or a bit too worried to meditate properly. So what does he sometimes do? He just does a few asanas. At least he can do those, and he finds that they have an effect upon his mind. His mind becomes calmer and more concentrated, he loses his tiredness, he becomes a bit more fresh, a bit more happy, just as though practically he meditated. And then again, there are the various Japanese dos or ways, like ikebana, flower arrangement. It might seem something very simple and very ordinary, just to arrange a few flowers in a vase, in a traditional way. First one sees that the people who have engaged in this over a period of years are very definitely changed in their mind, changed in their consciousness. I remember some years ago I attended a Buddhist summer school in London, in England, organized by the Buddhist Society, and I hadn't been along before. This was just after I returned from the East, and I noticed around 4 or 5 women, mostly elderly, cheerful women, who seemed rather different from everybody else, and I was wondering why this was. They looked more happy, they looked more positive, they seemed quite contented, they seemed quite sure of themselves. So in the course of a few days I understood, because they started giving demonstrations of flower arrangement. And they were all women who had become masters, or if you like, mistresses, I don't know which sort of term we're supposed to use nowadays, of this art, this way, this go of flower arrangement. And also one thinks of things like Tai Chi Chuan and so on. They all have an effect upon the mind. They are all indirect ways of raising the level of consciousness. Now, what about great works of art? Just a few days ago at the centre, we were talking about this, the enjoyment of great works of art, of great poetry, of great music, a great painting very often helps to raise the level of consciousness. That is to say, of course, if the works of art are truly great, if they really do issue from a higher state of consciousness in the artist himself, if they're an expression of a higher state of consciousness than we usually experience. And then coming down to something rather more practical and rather more rock bottom, as it were, simply helping other people. Helping people in practical ways, helping people in difficulties, disregarding perhaps our own comfort and our own convenience, and doing all this very willingly and cheerfully, helping with the sick, with the destitute, visiting perhaps those in prison, and trying to help the mentally distressed. And all this without any personal selfish motive. This is what in the Hindu tradition is called Nishkama Karma Yoga, disinterested action, or the yoga of disinterested action. And again, coming on to something of very much more general purport, association with spiritually minded people, especially with those who are spiritually more advanced than ourselves, if we can possibly find them. And this is sometimes regarded in some traditions or by some teachers as the most important of all the indirect methods. This is what we encounter again and again in India, what is referred to again and again in India in religious and spiritual literature as satsang. Sat meaning true, real, authentic, genuine, spiritual, if you like even transcendental, and sang, association, or communion, or fellowship, is just getting together, often in a very happy and carefree spirit, with people who are on the spiritual path and whose predominant interest is in spiritual things. And this rubs off on oneself, almost without any effort on one's own part. So this too is an indirect means of raising the level of consciousness. It's what in Buddhism we call Kalyana Mitrata, which means spiritual fellowship or spiritual communion. And we'll be going a little into this in our lecture next week when we speak on the meaning of the spiritual community. And then again, there's something like chanting. This is an indirect means of raising the level of consciousness. And even ritual worship. A ritual I know is very much looked down upon today, especially by the more intelligent, or perhaps I should say intellectual. But it is a time-honored method of raising the level of consciousness. Even if you offer a few flowers, or even if you light a candle and place it in front of an image or picture, all this has an effect upon one's mind. And sometimes people are surprised to find how much effect it does have. They might have read lots of books about spiritual life, might even have tried to meditate, might even have succeeded in meditating, but sometimes they find that a simple, but meaningful, even symbolic, ritual action, something that they do in this way, helps them even far more. So all these things, they help raise the level of consciousness. There are many more things, many more indirect methods that could be mentioned, such as study, that is to say, study with a teacher, but we've no time for all of that now. Now, these indirect methods can, of course, be combined, at least some of them can be combined, with the direct method, that is to say, with the practice of meditation. But good though these indirect methods are, in some cases at least, they can't carry us very far. They can't carry us up through all the levels of consciousness. But since in most cases it will be quite a while before we do pass on to the higher levels of consciousness, these indirect methods will be useful to us for quite a long time. But if we do start getting anywhere near those higher levels, then we shall have to have recourse to meditation more and more and more. Then we shall have to start working directly on the mind itself.